The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
The spectre of Trump looms over everything we are talking about on this trip in terms of transatlantic trade. And in fact, in a few minutes' time, Emmet Oliver has news on kind of pharmaceuticals out of Ireland as well on that front. And indeed, pharmaceuticals are our big export, our goods export into Canada, cereals the other way, and then their services as well. All of it, a multi-billion euro industry, which is the value of being here. But we're going to kind of park that for a moment, and we're going to talk maybe more about politics here in Canada at a national level and global politics as well, because Mark Carney, the Prime Minister of Canada, of course, in the White House with Donald Trump today. And with me to have the conversation, Brian Lilly. Brian's the chief political columnist for the Toronto Sun, and Tasha Carradine, who is the political columnist with the National Post. You're both very welcome, and thanks a million for joining us here in the pub. It is kind of serving time at home, but not here in Canada. So just water, I'm afraid. So, Brian, if you were to describe maybe what the big political issues would be in Canada today were it not for Donald Trump's election. Let's imagine that it was Kamala Harris in the White House and you guys had gone to the polls a few weeks ago. You probably would have a different government if polls were to be believed. What types of things would have been discussed in the campaign?
Housing affordability, the ability of young people to get into the housing market or even the rental market. You know, the cost of buying a home has gone through the roof, but rentals are rising astronomically as well. And so it's unaffordable, especially in big cities like Toronto, Vancouver, less so Montreal, for younger people to be able to live here. So, I mean, that's your future workforce. That's the people who are going to establish careers, start families, and continue to build the city. That is incredibly difficult right now. So that would have been a huge issue. Crime has gone up dramatically, especially violent crime and gun crime. The government's talked a lot about dealing with gun crime, but all of their focus was on, okay, we're going to take guns away from licensed gun owners, and they haven't really dealt with the real issue, which is the border. You know, Donald Trump wants to talk to us about drugs and people going across our border into the United States. Thousands and thousands of guns come across from the United States every year and are used in crimes here. So those would have been the issues, and you're right, would have been a very different election and most likely a very different outcome if Donald Trump wasn't there and if Justin Trudeau hadn't resigned.
Tasha, to what extent, all those problems still exist? So despite the fact that the Trump narrative that took over the campaign and it provided succor to the Liberal Party, of course, and we see Mark Carney then re-elected, are they waiting to re-emerge, all of those, as issues?
Those issues are still very live issues. And I think that we saw during this campaign, too, whenever Trump would recede from the public space, stop talking about Canada as a 51st state, those issues immediately came back. And they came back in the campaign, and they will continue to be big issues. And they'll be big issues also because the tariffs and threats of tariffs will really impact our economy. So things will get worse. The housing crisis that Brian mentioned will get worse. There's possibility of greater unemployment, and we're already seeing layoffs in our auto industry. We're seeing layoffs in the aluminum and steel industry. So these are going to be big issues for this government to deal with. And how they deal with it while we're potentially renegotiating a trade deal with the U.S., while things are getting worse, while we also have separatist sentiment now rising in the west of the country, which is upset of how it's being dealt with by Ottawa. It's a litany of problems.
How real is that? We spoke to a guy on the show last week in advance of coming out here from Alberta who was kind of adamant that, you know, Albertans should strike for independence. And I think he was hoping for, you know, a kind of fertile ground in Ireland, you know, that we would kind of remember our own history. I think people were maybe more bemused by him listening to the show. But I mean, how real a threat is that to the kind of constitutional integrity of Canada?
Well, right now you have 1 in 3 Albertans who say they might vote to be separate as a country. 1 in 6 would vote to join the United States, according to recent polling. And I think it's because of the United States that this has come up again, because there's an appetite for potentially another market for our oil, another place where people could see we could trade as opposed to with the rest of Canada. And the frustration that they're showing, It's also political for the government there. Danielle Smith is trying to keep her base happy, so she's making all this noise and seizing the occasion when Carney is in a weak spot with Trump to say, well, you know, what about us? Pay attention to us or we'll cause you problems. So it's a perfect storm of bad things.
The threat of tariffs and the imposition the same already, Brian, you know, it's already upended the world order kind of that we've all been used to a degree. And we had on the show earlier today, we had the Minister for Finance in Ireland, Pascal Donoghue, and he was talking about, you know, that whatever happens at the expiration of this famous 90 days, that there's going to be a diversification. There's going to be less reliance in Ireland on that US relationship. There'll still be some reliance, but not to the same degree. That's obviously a much more complicated picture for you guys, given your proximity and the border and just the cultural crossover and everything. So tell me a little bit about this idea, because I what really struck me about Mark Carney's speech when he was re-elected was talking about how forthright he was in acknowledging the old relationship is over. You know, that's not coming back. But what does a new relationship with the US or with the world look like?
On trade, I'm not sure. Like, Canadian prime ministers have been talking about diversifying our trading relationships for decades, and they've just gotten deeper and deeper. I looked up some crazy stats because I love numbers. And in 1896, when Canada was still part of the British Empire, 60% of our trade went to the UK or other parts of the empire. Now, 76% of our trade goes to the United States, according to the latest numbers. So we're more reliant on the United States for our economic well-being than we were on the British Empire when we were part of the empire, when the empire was actually a really big and important thing. So we've got to figure that out. There were a bunch of trade deals signed, especially by former Prime Minister Stephen Harper, around the world. Nobody took advantage of them, or they've been taken forever to implement. Like the European trade deal, that was signed in late 2014, 2015. It's still working its way through all the legislatures and approvals, and it's a pain in the butt to deal with, even though it's there. So look, we're still going to have the biggest chunk of our trade be with the United States, but we've got to break down our own internal barriers. It's easier to sell something to the Americans than between our provinces. I mean, can you imagine that if going between the different counties in Ireland, you had all these trade barriers? Oh, no, you can't sell that here. You got to package it differently. And it can't be that color. It's got to be this color, just to try and stop and protect little industries. Yeah, Ireland would be a mess. Well, we're a mess internally. We got to fix that. And we've got to find real trading partners in other countries. But the U.S. is still going to be the biggest beast for us to deal with.
And how then does all of this impact less on the trade or the economic space, Tasha, and more the social or the cultural space? I mean, the conversations had at the school gates, as it were. You know, we spoke to somebody on the show yesterday and they said, you know, you go down towards some of the border crossings kind of near Niagara and beyond, and the car traffic is down something like 20-30%. You've got these, what are they called? The snowbirds?
Mm-hmm.
And
snowbirds,
they actually spent their time in the snow this winter, a lot of them maybe. Not as many kind of jetting off down to Florida. So tell me a little bit about how that is all changing.
Oh, that is actually true. And the cross-border traffic, both airlines and the at the border by car, as you mentioned, is down. And it's impacting also the sort of the attitude Canadians have when they go to the grocery store. They want to find the little maple leaf and they want to buy Canadian products. When they go online, there's a sense, I shouldn't be buying from Amazon. I shouldn't buy from a U.S. retailer. I will only order Canadian things. There is a real effort people are making because they're mad. And this comes from the 51st state rhetoric. It is a disrespect to our country. And that is something that Canadians took very seriously. They booed the national anthem of the United States at multiple hockey games. When we won a hockey game against the United States, our prime minister then, you know, said, you can't take our country and you can't take our game. It's sort of really taking it personally. And I think that's not going to fade as long as Mr. Trump keeps up that rhetoric, because, you know, we have these great ties. And those snowbirds, you're right, they had a chilly winter. Many of them are even selling their properties because a lot of people, I'm from Quebec, and Montrealers, you know, it's down to the East Coast. That's where we go. It's like our Riviera. And we're not going to go to Florida anymore because we feel like we're not welcome, in fact. And many Americans are also now angry at Canada because of our attitude and vice versa. It's quite sad, actually.
Brent, that manifestation of, how would we describe it, kind of Canadian patriotism, is that what it is? The sales of the flag apparently have gone up as well in the last few months. That can become, or we certainly in a European sense, you see that sense of nationalism can tip over into, or patriotism can tip over into a kind of a toxic nationalism pretty easily. I mean, is there any evidence of that?
I don't think so, and I don't think we'll get there. We went quickly from being a country that flew our flag at half-mast for 6 months, described ourselves as a post-national genocidal state under Justin Trudeau to, oh, we're the greatest country in the world. So we've been a bit schizophrenic on this. I've always been a proud Canadian, and that won't change, but I don't think we'll go down that toxic road. There's no one on our political spectrum that would be pushing that sort of thing, that nobody that has any credence or any significant following. But yeah, my parents sold their place in Florida just this year. You know, would they have if it hadn't been for this? Maybe, maybe not. They've been hemming and hawing about it, but now they've just said, all right, we're out, and maybe we'll go back. But, you know, thankfully, I'm hearing a lot of I'm sorries from the Americans. You know, the stereotype is Canadians are constantly saying I'm sorry and apologizing. Now they're apologizing to us for the way things are going with Donald Trump, and not just Democrats and people that hate Trump. I was down in Washington recently, was hearing that from Republicans, including some that are close with him, and saying, look, we'll get this sorted out. We'll figure this out and we'll come to a better deal. But I mean, one way it's been described with me to me about why Canada's been hit so hard is there are real trade problems that the Americans have had with other countries, like, you know, 100% tariffs on your goods and on American goods going in, and they have a 2% tariff. That's understandable that you want to fix that. But Canada, you know, we're nice. We're neighbors. We have a deal. But what do? Well, you go out and you beat up the guy you're closest to as a warning to everybody else. And that's kind of what's been going on. Mm. We'll see if that continues with, you know, with Donald Trump. Now that Trudeau's gone, he hated Justin Trudeau. And, you know, if you remember when Justin Trudeau came in on the cover of Vogue, a world celebrity, by the end, he wasn't just disliked in Canada, he was disliked in a lot of world centers as well, and especially by the American president. The feeling was mutual. They hated each other. They needled each other. And hopefully him being gone and Carney being in there makes things a lot smoother and we get back to a normal relationship.
If we kind of finish, Tasha, on maybe a look at domestic issues here, which is where we started, you know, Brian setting out some of them. And what struck me is particularly around housing, we have a lot of those problems here and in Ireland. And one of the things we fail to do in Ireland too often when we talk about Donald Trump is we fail to try and understand why people might vote for him. The deplorables, the kind of the Hillary Clinton understanding of that group of people is what's often relied upon. And to a degree, there was a kind of a collapse for a certain cohort of people of the idea of the American dream. You get a decent job, and what does it mean? It means you can have a house, and you'll have a car in the driveway, and go on a holiday once a year, and the kids can go to college, as it were. And that's kind of evaporated, and that's led to us kind of senses of dissatisfaction and disenfranchisement. And we see that a little bit in Ireland. We'd kind of call it the social contract, a breakdown of the social contract that, you know, I do those things, and I'm not going to be wealthy, but if I'm a, you know, a police officer or a nurse or something, you know, I'll make it through life and I can support a family. And that's no longer the case. And I just wonder again on the housing front, while that's such an issue and affordability, is that emerging in Canada? Was there a version of the Canadian dream or the social contract that's collapsing and that people worry about how it will manifest in years to come?
Absolutely. And that was the biggest issue in the election, because you're seeing a massive failure to launch of an entire generation who cannot move out of their parents' home because they cannot afford to live on their own. You're seeing also immigrants coming into this country, and we had a huge number of immigrants come in a very short span of time who also put pressure on housing stock, couldn't find a place to live. For them, the Canadian dream that was sold to them didn't exist. They many actually ended up going back home. Their visas have now all been cut off too for studying. The reason is because Canadian-born people here also cannot achieve that dream. And that anger actually flipped the political calculus. You have younger people voted conservative in this election. Older people voted liberal. Why? Because they had something to protect. But the younger people said, we don't even have anything. We want hope. We want something. So usually it's the opposite. Usually the older voters are conservative. They were not this time. And that is something I think that will carry forward. It's a trend we haven't seen in this country yet. But if housing issues are not addressed, I think the conservative vote will continue to grow because younger people will want that option. They will want someone to say, we will help you achieve your Canadian dream.
Well, listen, later in the show, Tasha mentions the migrant experience. We're going to go down to Ireland Park, where there are sculptures there to commemorate the Irish migrant experience into this country. And just to put people kind of in mind as to what we're going to see. In 1847, the worst year of the famine, 40,000 Irish migrants landed here in Toronto. The population of Toronto was about 20,000 at the time. So, I mean, we spend a lot of our time kind of worrying about the level of inward migration these days. Nothing like it was back then for people here in Toronto. So listen, we're going to get a sense of all of that and the impact it had on this part of the world and the migrant experience later. We mentioned the spectre of Trump, though, hanging over everything. And Emmett Oliver, after the break, is going to have some news on that front from an Irish pharmaceutical point of view. But until then, thank you very much to Brian Lilly. Brian's the chief political columnist for the Toronto Sun, and to Tasha Carradine, who is a national columnist, political columnist with the National Post. Brian and Tasha, thank you both very, very much for joining us here on the show.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.